Hi, this is Brian, and we are reading The Hill for Tuesday, May 26th. The story, U.S. forces conduct strikes in Iran, CENTCOM says. U.S. Central Command, or CENTCOM, on Monday said U.S. forces fired defensive strikes in southern Iran amid discussions to bring the U.S.-Israeli conflict with Tehran to an end. These strikes were intended to protect our troops from threats posed by Iranian forces, specifically boats attempting to lay mines and missile launch sites, Navy Captain Tim Hawkins, a CENTCOM spokesperson, told The Hill. U.S. Central Command continues to defend our forces while using restraint during the ongoing ceasefire, Hawkins said. Earlier Monday, Reuters reported explosions in southern Iran, in Bandar, Abbas City, and around coastal areas near the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. and Iran have held a ceasefire since April 7. The stalemate has seen a few small attacks since last month, though none have violated the ceasefire's terms. A memorandum of understanding between Tehran and Washington has emerged, though it has not been finalized. If agreed to, the Strait of Hormuz would open to allow roughly 20% of the world's oil to flow once again, and all hostilities would end. Global gas prices have skyrocketed since the U.S. conflict erupted in late February. The national average for gas in the U.S. is $4.50 as of Monday, according to AAA. The agreement would also require Iran to give up its stockpile of enriched uranium, the Associated Press reported. The details of this removal would be hashed out during the future talks with a 60-day extension of the ceasefire. President Trump on Monday said negotiations were proceeding nicely, describing the possible agreement as a great deal for all. He later suggested two outcomes for Iran's enriched uranium. The enriched uranium nuclear dust will either be immediately turned over to the United States to be brought home and destroyed, or preferably in conjunction and coordination with the Islamic Republic of Iran, destroyed in place or at another acceptable location, with the Atomic Energy Commission or its equivalent being witness to this process, an event Trump wrote on Truth Social. Trump and administration officials have long maintained that Iran must not create or possess nuclear weapons. The regime has insisted that its nuclear program is intended for peaceful purposes. The story, Navy chief undercuts Trump and Hegseth on Taiwan, Iran. Acting Navy Secretary Hung Kao's insistence this week that the Pentagon has paused a $14 billion arms sale to Taiwan over a munitions review has undercut the Trump administration's narrative on both Iran and Taipei. Kao on Thursday told Senate appropriators that while the U.S. has plenty of missiles and interceptors, the Trump administration is holding off on some foreign military sales to make sure we have the munitions we need for epic fury, referring to the official name for President Trump's war with Iran. Kao's remarks, which contradict Trump's claims that he may hold off on the arms sale to Taiwan as a negotiating chip with China, also discounts the administration's narrative that the munitions stockpiles are no cause for worry, but coinciding issues may prove to be a benefit for Trump as he looks to rebuild America's stockpiles while also seeking diplomatic gains with Beijing. On one hand, Trump wants to keep U.S.-China relations on a constructive path, at least until Chinese President Xi Jinping visits Washington in September. And on the other hand, there is a munition problem. So if you can delay the sale or delay delivery of the order and sort of help both of these issues at the same time, it makes sense, said Evan Sankey, an analyst at the Cato Institute, focusing on U.S. foreign policy toward China and East Asia. It is both things, and if that munitions problem dovetails with President Trump's diplomatic preferences regarding China, that's kind of like a happy coincidence, he told The Hill. Trump last week traveled to China to meet with Xi, taking care during the trip to publicly steer clear of any mention of Taiwan, which Beijing sees as part of its territory. China has threatened to bring Taipei under its control by force if necessary, increasing its military drills around the island, and has discouraged Washington from selling it weapons. Case in point, when the administration in December approved a separate $11 billion arms sale to Taiwan, one of the largest such packages ever, China vehemently opposed it, claiming it would accelerate the push toward a dangerous and violent situation across the Taiwan Strait. That weapons package has not yet been advanced. Though the U.S. maintains formal diplomatic ties with China and doesn't recognize Taiwan as a country, Washington provides the island with weapons to help it maintain its self-defense. Following his Beijing visit, Trump told reporters that the arms sale was discussed with Xi in great detail, even though in 1982 the U.S. pledged to Taiwan it would not consult Beijing on arms sales to the island. He said he hadn't yet approved the $14 billion deal with Taipei, as we're going to see what happens. I may do it, I may not do it. He also told Fox News that arms sales to Taiwan are a very good negotiating chip in Washington's handlings of Beijing. The comments quickly riled defense hawks in Congress, with Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, asking Cao about the arms pause on Thursday, calling the delay distressing. We're just making sure we have everything, but then the foreign military sales will continue when the administration deems necessary, Cao replied during a Senate Appropriations Defense Subcommittee hearing. At the same hearing, Senator John Kennedy, Republican of Louisiana, pressed Navy Chief of Operations Admiral Darrell Caudle on the sale to Taiwan, asking him if he agreed that it would be a good idea for the U.S. to gain leverage with China. Caudle declined to offer his opinion, saying such deals are very complex and require a full calculus of all the levers of power that are being negotiated and worked. What more do we have to know, Admiral? President Xi has telegraphed his anxiety, his insecurity. We want leverage. We want stability, not a war. Why don't we just go ahead and sell the weapons to Taiwan that Taiwan wants? Kennedy asked. Caudle maintained that the U.S. definitely wants Taiwan to be as strong as they can be, but added that he wouldn't get in front of the administration's decision. Zach Cooper, a senior fellow with the American Enterprise Institute, told The Hill that he believes Beijing has built up leverage to try and make it more difficult for Trump to carry out arms sales to Taiwan without incurring the loss of the relationship. The Chinese might condition Xi Jinping's trip to the U.S., planned for September, on Trump not providing arms, Cooper said. They also think it's very likely that they will condition Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's trip to China, which I've heard is scheduled for July, on that arms sales package either not being announced or being significantly shrunk. He pointed out that the U.S. delay is not entirely out of the ordinary, since the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran began in February 28. Washington also has held off on a shipment of Tomahawk missiles to Japan, reportedly telling the nation that deliveries of its order for about 400 missiles by March 2028 would be disrupted. An arms sale to South Korea also has been delayed, though Seoul has been hesitant to comment publicly, Cooper said. Washington has reportedly burned through thousands of missiles since the start of the Iran war, which has been in a tenuous ceasefire since April. Administration officials have insisted munitions stockpiles are not strained, accusing the press and lawmakers of exaggerating the issue. First of all, the munitions issue has been foolishly and unhelpfully overstated, Hegseth told House appropriators last week. We know exactly what we have. We have plenty of what we need. Among the munitions expended include nearly all of the long-range stealth cruise missiles left in Washington's stockpile, and thousands of Tomahawks, Patriot interceptor missiles, precision strike, and ATAX ground-based missiles. Congress for over a month has anticipated a supplemental request from the White House, reportedly set for between $80 billion to $100 billion to fund the Iran war, with a significant chunk meant to backfill costly and sophisticated weapons. Even with the arms sale uncertainty, Taiwanese officials still maintain the U.S. policy on the island remains unchanged and that its authorities haven't been notified of a hold on the planned $14 billion deal. I think we remain cautiously optimistic about arms purchases, Taiwan Defense Minister Wellington Koo said last week. The story, the Wall Street Journal board warns Trump against economic bailout in Iran deal. The Wall Street Journal editorial board on Sunday pushed back on the reported terms of a peace deal being negotiated by the Trump administration and the Iranian government. The editorial board wrote that while the administration can claim real achievements from the war, the ceasefire period may deliver a strategic setback for the U.S. Multiple outlets reported Sunday that the potential agreement involves a 60-day ceasefire, which would allow for the two sides to negotiate restrictions on Tehran's nuclear program. Under the deal, the U.S. would end its naval blockade of Iranian ports, a measure it took in response to the Iranian military restricting transit through the Strait of Hormuz. Iran's effective closure of the strait, which carries roughly a fifth of the world's oil supply, resulted in higher oil prices globally and increased prices at the pump for Americans. Those costs dropped slightly after the potential deal was reported. On Saturday, U.S. Central Command, or CENTCOM, said that it had redirected 100 vessels as part of the blockade, which began on April 13. CENTCOM noted that its forces have also disabled 4 vessels and allowed 26 humanitarian aid ships to pass through that time span. The journal's editorial board, however, wrote that if the U.S. ends the blockade and allows Iran to sell its oil as part of a peace deal, the administration's lone tool to coerce the Islamic Republic into nuclear concessions is the threat of renewed war. It added, but Trump wasn't willing to do that after Iran reneged on reopening the Strait of Hormuz and attacked U.S. forces and Gulf allies. How credible will the threat be 60 days closer to midterms when it would trigger new Iranian blockade of Hormuz? A pledge not to build a nuclear weapon means nothing because the regime has always said that while doing the opposite. President Trump wrote on Truth Social Monday that negotiations with Iran are proceeding nicely. He added it will only be a great deal for all or no deal at all. Back to the battlefront and shooting, but bigger and stronger than ever before, and nobody wants that. Secretary of State Marco Rubio also told reporters Monday that the two sides have a solid deal on the table. The president's not going to make a bad agreement, he said during a press conference from New Delhi, India. So let's see what happens. We're going to give diplomacy every chance to succeed before we explore the alternatives. But the editorial board wrote that it is fair to wonder if the political pressure imposed by rising gas prices and bond yields is pushing Trump toward reopening the Strait of Hormuz, even if it is on Iran's terms. It concluded Iran's regime went into this war facing domestic political and economic crises, or has made these worse. Saving such a regime now with an economic bailout would be the real betrayal of the U.S. interest, even more than the Iranian people. The story, Trump friction with GOP senators may imperil his agenda, say senators. Senate Republican sources say that President Trump's agenda for the rest of the year is in serious trouble, including a budget reconciliation package to fund immigration enforcement operations through 2029 after tempers erupted at a meeting between GOP senators and Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche last week. GOP senators say that Trump has no chance of getting taxpayer money to fund construction of the White House ballroom and are warning that he will probably have to abandon or significantly reform his proposal to establish a $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund if the stalled budget reconciliation package has any chance of passing before the midterm election. Senate sources say there's a group of 4 GOP senators whom Trump has alienated, Senators Tom Tillis of North Carolina, Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, John Cornyn of Texas, and Rand Paul of Kentucky, who could make it tougher to get things passed through the Senate the rest of this year. Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, said it became clear after last week's fiery meeting with Blanche that the administration could have a tough time moving its agenda through Congress for the rest of this year because of Trump's strained relationships with Tillis, Cassidy, Cornyn, and Paul. We have a 53-47 majority. If you lose four senators, you're below 50, and you can't get anything done, he said on his podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz. That is going to be a complicating factor for the rest of the year, he warned. Those four senators, I don't envision suddenly anything becoming a hunky-dory, and they're being happy, like that dynamic for 2026. The rest of the year, we're going to have interesting challenges, he predicted. Senate Republicans have a 53-seat majority, and moderate Senators Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, and Lisa Murkowski, Republican of Alaska, have a track record of breaking with GOP leaders on big votes. The administration is creating issues everywhere by pissing off these senators. It's really a bad strategy, said a senior GOP aide. Senate Republicans feel like they've been under attack from Trump and the White House and are fed up with what they view as a lack of communication from the executive branch and, all too often, a lack of respect, say GOP Senate sources familiar with the dynamics within the GOP conference. Even some of Trump's closest allies, including Senators Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, pushed back on the administration over the Memorial Day weekend about a potential peace deal with Iran that Trump said had been largely negotiated, but left unclear key details about how it would address Iran's nuclear program or missile stockpile. If a deal is struck to end the Iranian conflict because it is believed that the Strait of Hormuz cannot be protected from Iranian terrorism, and Iran still possesses the capability to destroy major Gulf oil infrastructure, then Iran will be perceived as being a dominant force requiring a diplomatic solution, Graham wrote on X, the social media platform. Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman Roger Wicker, Republican of Mississippi, warned on Saturday the rumored 60-day ceasefire with the belief that Iran will ever engage in good faith would be a disaster. One Republican senator who requested anonymity to comment on colleagues' frustrations with the White House said that fellow GOP senators are sick and tired of being put in tough political positions by Trump in an election year when the president's party is expected to face serious political headwinds. Republican senators saw the administration's proposal, unveiled in recent days, to establish a $1.8 billion fund to compensate people who were prosecuted by the Biden-era Justice Department as the latest and most egregious example of a politically unpopular White House idea that they would be forced to defend. People are tired. I think they feel they're under siege and the White House is very, very difficult to work with and not good to work with. I mean, below the level of the president, the GOP senator said, summing up the reasons why GOP colleagues exploded at Blanche last week. They treat people badly. You can do that for a short period of time, but over time it's corrosive. Roughly half of the Republican senators who met with Blanche vented frustrations with the administration over the legal compensation fund and other issues, including Trump's slipping approval ratings, which could drag down GOP candidates in November, according to a person familiar with the discussion. Republican senators and aides warned that the budget reconciliation package, with nearly $70 billion in funding for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and Border Patrol, may be dead unless the administration abandons the $1.8 billion weaponization fund or dramatically overhauls the proposal. One source said that GOP senators and House Republicans as well are likely to hear a lot of blowback over the idea from constituents when they go home for the Memorial Day recess. The senator said Trump's endorsement of primary challengers to Senators Cassidy and Cornyn, two popular members of Senate GOP conference, has added to the bad blood between GOP senators and the president. Cassidy came in third place in Louisiana's Senate primary, Republican primary, missing the June 27 runoff after Trump backed his challenger, Representative Julie Letlow, Republican of Louisiana, and Cornyn is now considered a big underdog heading into Tuesday's Senate Republican primary runoff in Texas. Trump disappointed many Republican senators when he endorsed Cornyn's opponent, State Attorney General Ken Paxton, even though Paxton was previously charged with felony securities fraud and agreed to 100 hours of community service as part of a pretrial diversion agreement, and lawmakers and aides are warning that Blanche now has no chance of being confirmed to head the Justice Department in a long-term capacity after he infuriated Republican senators at Thursday's meeting by pushing back on lawmakers' calls to put guardrails on legal compensation fund. Blanche has been serving as an acting capacity since Trump ousted Attorney General Pam Bondi in early April. The senior GOP aide said Blanche got screamed at from senators spanning the ideologically spectrum, absolutely furious at this weaponization fund. On Blanche's face, it looked like he could see his own career evaporating in front of him, said a GOP aide. He knows he is now unconfirmable as a permanent attorney general, which he assumed he was going to be and making a play for. Tillis, who lit into Blanche at Thursday's meeting and has led the Senate Republican pushback to the administration's proposed anti-weaponization fund, sits on the Senate Judiciary Committee, which would confirm Bondi's successor. Senate Republican leaders decided not to mark up the budget reconciliation package in the Judiciary Committee because they couldn't count on Tillis as a reliable vote for the measure or against amendments to change it, according to a Senate GOP source familiar with the planning of the bill's markup. The Senate Judiciary Committee, in a statement released on May 11, said Republicans decided to cancel its markup because the Senate Homeland Security Committee had announced plans for a markup, and only one committee is required to mark up a budget reconciliation bill. There is little doubt, however, that the president and his team would have a hard time persuading Tillis to support Blanche or any controversial nominee moving through the Judiciary Committee. Relations between Trump and Tillis sank even lower on Friday after they clashed over social media, with Trump blasting Tillis as a quitter who didn't have the courage to run for re-election, and Tillis responding that Trump's embrace of bad ideas being floated by his advisors will hurt Republican candidates in November. Trump's chances of confirming his nominees to the Department of Health and Human Services may also sink lower. These positions would include someone to replace Marty Makary, the former commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, as well as Nicole Safier, Trump's pick to serve Surgeon General. The president's previous pick to fill the Surgeon General's job, Casey Means, withdrew her nomination in late April after she failed to advance through the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. Cassidy, who chairs the Senate Health Committee, led the chorus of Senate GOP complaints against the proposed $1 billion for the White House ballroom and the $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund. Republican senators and aides warned that Cornyn could emerge as another obstacle to Trump's agenda if he loses his race to Paxton. Cornyn's vote will be critical to confirming a nominee to replace Tulsi Gabbard as Director of National Intelligence. Gabbard resigned from her position Friday, announcing that she wanted to spend more time with her husband after he received a cancer diagnosis. With how much they've pissed off Cassidy, I would say it's going to be a lot tougher for them to get nominees through the HELP committee, said the senior GOP aide. And now that the president stomped on Cornyn, it's going to be a lot harder to get a new DNI to replace Gabbard through the Intelligence Committee, the aide added. Cornyn did not attend Thursday's meeting with Blanche because he was in Texas campaigning ahead of the Tuesday runoff. Cornyn on Wednesday said he's disappointed in the fact that the president didn't endorse his reelection campaign, but argued that he could still beat Paxton. "We've got the best team and the best plan of any election I've ever run in, and we're going to turn out the vote and intend to win," he said. Asked how Trump's endorsement of primary challengers facing off Senate GOP incumbents might impact the president's agenda, Cornyn replied, "I'll let you draw your own conclusions about that." The story: tech titans prepare for blockbuster IPOs in new front of AI race. Three of the world's leading AI companies are racing to go public, opening yet another front in the high-stakes competition over the technology. SpaceX, OpenAI, and Anthropic are all expected to make their stock market debut with hefty valuations as investors are eager to get in on the companies at the heart of the AI boom that have previously been locked up in private markets. It marks the latest stage in the AI race that shows no sign of slowing as Elon Musk's rocket company and the two AI upstarts seek to join more well-established tech giants on public markets and gain access to additional funding. A key benefit for companies seeking vast amounts of costly computing power. These companies need money, David Foster, a clinical professor of finance at the University of San Diego's Noss School of Business, told The Hill. They're all trying to build out AI infrastructure, their servers, their data centers, power centers, all that stuff. They're all trying to build all that stuff out at once, so it's big dollars, he said. But as private companies, they just don't have the resources to be able to spend that money, Foster added, so that's one of the biggest issues, is they have to come public to go after big equity dollars to be able to spend the money just to keep up with the race. SpaceX is the first on deck. The company, which merged with Musk's XAI earlier this year, has filed for an initial public offering, or IPO, and is reportedly eyeing a record-breaking $1.75 trillion valuation and a mid-June debut. On Wednesday, it publicly filed its preliminary prospectus, offering investors the first glimpse into the firm's underlying finances. The document shows SpaceX posted a $4.28 billion loss for the first 3 months of 2026, despite raking in $4.69 billion in revenue. For the full year in 2025, the company brought in $18.67 billion, but ultimately faced a loss of $4.94 billion. SpaceX, which was founded in 2002, has made a name for itself as a leading rocket launch provider and a satellite internet provider via its Starlink business. But with the XAI merger, Musk has sought to shift the company into an AI play as well, pointing to the prospect of data centers in space. I think a lot of people look at it still as more of a traditional aerospace type company, and it's really trying to be at the center of the AI infrastructure, aerospace exploration. Brad Gasworth, global head of research and market intelligence for the supply chain services firm Circular Technology, told The Hill. The company has directed a significant portion of its capital expenditures toward AI, spending $7.72 billion on the segment just in the first quarter of 2026. By comparison, it invested $1.05 billion in its space segment and $1.33 billion in its connectivity segment, which includes Starlink. SpaceX's heavy capital spending on AI isn't entirely unique. As of late April, Bank of America analysts estimated that total AI capital expenditures could reach $800 billion in 2026 and top $1 trillion in 2027. Tech companies are investing eye-popping sums to build out AI infrastructure, namely data centers, to provide the computing capacity needed to continue developing and running new models. OpenAI has reportedly told investors that it plans to spend $600 billion on compute by 2030. Anthropic has reached a series of deals over the past 2 months to boost its computing capacity. This includes a deal with SpaceX, for which it will pay $1.25 billion a month through 2029, according to Wednesday's filing. The amount of money that these companies are spending on AI infrastructure and what's needed is just so large, Gasworth said, adding the availability and the ease of getting that substantial amount of liquidity. The easiest way to do that at this scale is from an IPO. OpenAI appears poised to be the next AI darling to make a move fast on the heels of SpaceX. The Wall Street Journal reported Wednesday that the ChatGPT maker is preparing to file for an IPO in the coming days and weeks with an eye toward a September debut. The company is one of the rare private companies whose products are already used daily by hundreds of millions of users. Minmo Gang, assistant professor of finance at Cornell University, noted in a statement. It became a household name following the launch of ChatGPT in late 2022. This recognition could generate substantial retail demand, Gang said. But the same growth story requires enormous capital spending, he added. Competition from Anthropic, Google, Meta, and others makes the path toward durable, positive cash flow uncertain. In its latest funding round in March, OpenAI raised $122 billion at a valuation of $852 billion. It also touted $2 billion in revenue a month. As the company seeks to fend off doubts about its ability to keep up with massive computing commitments. The deeper tension is governance, Gang added. OpenAI's for-profit arm is a Delaware public benefit corporation controlled by a nonprofit foundation, so its directors must balance shareholder returns against the broader nonprofit mission. OpenAI has a somewhat unique corporate structure that has been a source of headaches for the ChatGPT marker in recent years, fueling a high-profile legal dispute with Musk that has further raised the stakes of the IPO race. The company was founded as a nonprofit in 2015 by OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, Musk, and others. OpenAI added a for-profit arm in 2019 and ultimately converted the entity into a public benefit corporation last year, that remained under the control of the nonprofit. Musk, who left OpenAI in 2018, sued the company in 2024, accusing his co-founders of manipulating him into funding the venture before abandoning its original nonprofit mission. Following a three-week trial that put Musk and Altman's years-long feud on display, a federal jury unanimously rejected the Tesla CEO's claims, finding he waited too long to file a lawsuit. The tech mogul has vowed to appeal. This was a huge sigh of relief for OpenAI as it removes the $134 billion overhang on the company's operations, which would have caused significant damages on the company's path to going public and its IPO in the coming year, while keeping Altman at the helm over the coming years, Wedbush Securities analyst Dan Ives wrote in a note last week. Meanwhile, Anthropic is considering going public as soon as October, Bloomberg reported earlier this year. The AI company behind Claude has had a turbulent few months, marked by a high-profile dispute with the Pentagon and the limited release of its powerful new model, Mythos. It raised $30 billion at a $380 billion valuation in February, but the Wall Street Journal reported it is looking to raise another $30 billion at a $900 billion valuation. The company also recently told investors it expects to see $10.9 billion in revenue this quarter, according to the journal. The whisper is that they've had a very big last quarter, and they're actually turning a profitable, which is important for them, Foster said. So if they come public second, I think it'd be a great time for them, especially after a successful SpaceX. The story GOP hopes for legislative wins shows signs of slipping away. Some Republicans are growing increasingly worried that the delay in passing a major immigration enforcement funding bill could force them to punt either other key priorities, as the party works to lock in as many legislative wins as possible and blunt Democratic momentum ahead of the midterms. GOP lawmakers are eyeing a third party line spending package that could bundle funding for the Iran military conflict, defense spending, health care reform, fraud prevention, and other initiatives in an effort to round out their policy agenda heading into the fall. They are hoping to move the package through the budget reconciliation process, the same maneuver they are using for the immigration bill, allowing them to bypass Democratic support. But with the fight over immigration enforcement funding bill dragging on, House Republicans acknowledge that the timeline for another reconciliation package is slipping, with just 2 months left before lawmakers depart for a month-long recess in August, and they are pointing the finger at the Senate for the holdup. asked whether he thinks the delay in the immigration bill could impact the timeline for Reconciliation 3.0, Representative Tim Burkett, Republican of Tennessee, said, "Absolutely, and I think you're seeing that on the Senate side, because they don't approve of the president, and they're trying to dislodge him at all costs. And by dislodging him, though, they lose the majority, but they really don't care about that." Representative Byron Donalds, Republican of Florida, said it's possible that a third reconciliation bill could be stalled. "There's only so many legislative days up here, which is why I don't even understand what the Senate's over there doing. The other issues you might have, figure that out later. I mean, because that's what we do over here in this chamber. We have issues with a bunch of different things that go on. When it comes time to getting that core piece of business done, we get that done and we figure out the rest of it. I don't even know what they're doing," Donald said. Representative Buddy Carter, Republican of Georgia, said, "It's certainly a concern that the immigration bill being punted could throw off the timeline for a third reconciliation package. I mean, obviously there's a time crunch," he said. "The decision to punt the immigration bill came after GOP senators were unable to agree on how to deal with the Trump administration's proposal for a nearly $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund that would pay out people who believe they were unfairly investigated or prosecuted under the Biden Department of Justice. Some Senate Republicans had also opposed a provision in the package that would include $1 billion in security funding for a new White House ballroom and other Secret Service priorities. The Senate parliamentarian had ruled against the measure, leaving lawmakers divided over how or whether to revise the provision and incorporate it back into the package. It's unclear how much bandwidth Republicans will have to hammer out the framework and policy details of a third reconciliation bill when they return from their one-week recess in June, as they will be consumed by the immigration package, a likely contentious fight over a long-term extension of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act's warrantless spying powers, and a push to get the farm bill and housing bill across the finish line. Republicans have also floated including funding for the Iran operation in the third bill, potentially adding another layer of urgency to get it done before the August recess, House Appropriations Committee Chair Tom Cole, Republican of Oklahoma, told The Hill that he's heard the Pentagon's funding for Iran will dry up by August, as first reported by Punchbowl News. The conflict has stretched over 3 months, and the Pentagon's acting chief financial officer told members of the House Armed Services Committee last month that the operation has cost $25 billion so far. Representative Eric Burleson, Republican of Missouri, said he would like to see Iran funding done in a reconciliation bill because you can find pay-fors. "I would be okay if we're able to find some savings, especially in some of the waste, fraud, and abuse that we found in all of these states," Burleson said. House Budget Committee Chair Jody Arrington, Republican of Texas, told reporters before the Senate decided to punt the immigration bill last week that Republicans are making good progress on a third reconciliation bill. "We're already working on the things. We don't need permission from anybody in the Senate," Arrington said. "At some point, we have to engage the process formally, do a resolution, you know, turn this thing on with instructions and everything. But we got to get that consensus first. We're not there, but man, are we making good progress." He also noted that we're talking about 3.0 while we wait for 2.0. "Still, another reconciliation bill will be a heavy lift for Republicans, especially with the tight GOP margin in the House. Getting reconciliation bills it's just not a simple matter, and our margins are as tight as they can be, not only in the House, but also in the Senate. Our margins are really tight, and so I'm hoping that we can do another reconciliation bill, but I also know how difficult these things can be," said Representative Mario Diaz-Balart, Republican of Florida. Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana, can only afford to lose 2 votes on any party line bill, assuming all members are present and Democrats are unified in opposition. Burleson said we need to start now on whatever we're going to get passed, whether it's in three or if this one delays long enough, we make changes to this one and then do it in two if it's possible. At the end of the day, we need to be moving forward and making sure that we hammer out the language, get it refined, get it ready to go, he said. The story races to watch in Texas's primary runoffs, Cornwin Paxton, Chip Roy's attorney general bid, House contests. Senator John Cornwin, Republican of Texas, will be in the fight of his political life Tuesday as he looks to defy the odds and defeat Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, who clinched an endorsement from President Trump in the Senate GOP runoff. The last-minute support tees up another test of Trump's influence in a Republican primary. The president has already successfully picked off several detractors, including Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican of Louisiana, Representative Thomas Massey, Republican of Kentucky. While the Senate race is the Lone Star State's marquee runoff, other widely watched races have come down to a final pair of candidates who did not win half of the vote outright in March. One of those is the heated Democratic primary between Representatives Al Green and Christian Menefee for a Houston area House seat that's turned into a proxy battle over generational change. Meanwhile, former Representative Colin Allred, Democrat of Texas, is challenging his successor, Representative Julie Johnson, Democrat of Texas, for a Dallas-based House seat. Here are the races to watch in Texas's primary runoffs. Senate Republican primary, voters must decide whether to rally behind the Trump-backed Paxton for Cornwin's seat in the Lone Star State or buck the president and put the senior senator one step closer to a fifth term. Cornwin, who sought to align himself with Trump while overcoming pushback for his past criticism of the president, placed first in the initial March 3 GOP primary for his seat at 42% support. Paxton, who's argued he's the more authentic Trump-aligned candidate and has questioned Cornwin's conservative bona fides, placed at a close second at nearly 41% support. Representative Wesley Hunt, Republican of Texas, served as a spoiler candidate, forcing Cornwin and Paxton into the Tuesday runoff. After months of teasing a potential endorsement, Trump on Tuesday made a last-minute endorsement for the embattled state attorney general, causing a seismic shift in the primary. The senior senator is pushing forward as he and his allies argue that Paxton's controversies, including a Texas House impeachment trial on corruption charges that he was later acquitted of in the state Senate, have made some Republicans concerned he could be a liability in the general election against Democratic candidate James Tallarico. But Cornwin's re-election bid appears uncertain. In recent weeks alone, Trump has been able to oust several Republicans who have split with him on different priorities. 18th Congressional District Democratic Primary. Texas is front and center in the conversation around generational change this cycle, with the contest pitting Menefee, a 38-year-old first-term lawmaker, against Green, a 78-year-old incumbent who's drawn national attention over his public rebukes of the president. The congressmen were forced into an uncomfortable member-on-member primary for the Houston area 18th Congressional District after Texas Republicans redrew their congressional lines at the urging of Trump and national Republicans to gain a handful of pickup opportunities in the House. Menefee was unable to fend off Green entirely in the March primary, placing first at 46% support to Green's 44%. Menefee suggested the race is not about age, but effectiveness in a recent interview with KHOU 11, and has said he's heard from community members who say they want the torch to be passed. Green, however, has argued he has the seniority and experience needed for the job. The senior lawmaker has also criticized the involvement of the crypto industry, which has supported Menefee in the race. A poll from the University of Houston's Hobby School of Public Affairs this month showed Menefee at 50% support and Green at 43%, with a separate 7% of respondents undecided. Whoever wins the Democratic primary will be considered the favorite to win in November. 33rd Congressional District's Democratic primary. Johnson and Allred are facing off in an awkward head-to-head contest after Allred dropped his Senate bid and decided to run again for a newly drawn House seat in the Dallas area, launching a primary challenge against the lawmaker who succeeded him in Congress. Allred won 44% of the vote, but Johnson is second at 33% in March. The former congressman has gone after his successor over her Palantir stock trades. Palantir is a major federal contractor for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, which has become a flashpoint in the midterms, particularly after ICE was involved in two separate fatal shootings of U.S. citizens. If you say you're going to stand up to this administration, you can't also be profiting from it, Allred told CBS News Texas in an interview earlier this month. Johnson, meanwhile, has alleged that Allred has falsely characterized her stock trades, telling CBS News Texas in a separate interview aired earlier in May that everyone knows I've had independent money managers. I immediately sold the Palantir stock when I became aware that we had it, and I made $90 on it. She suggested Allred had made those inaccurate statements because he doesn't have a record to run on, and she noted he has taken shots over several votes he took over immigration while in Congress. Allred told CBS News Texas that those votes took place while former President Biden was in office, at which time ICE was a very different agency. Given the district is reliably blue, whoever wins the Democratic primary will be the favorite to win in November. Texas Attorney General Republican primary. Representative Chip Roy, Republican of Texas, and State Senator Mays Middleton, Republican, are squaring off Tuesday to succeed Paxton as the state's top prosecutor. Middleton and Roy advanced to the runoff in a field that included two other Republicans, including Paxton's preferred pick, former Justice Department official Aaron Wrights. There's little daylight between Middleton and Roy, who are both considered very conservative Republicans. Roy has leaned into his background, noting he served as a federal prosecutor and as a first assistant attorney general in Texas under Paxton. Meanwhile, Middleton has argued that his wealth means he can't be bought or rented and noted that he has championed conservative causes throughout his time as a state lawmaker. Trump has notably not weighed in on the primary. Roy has drawn the president's ire in the past for bucking him on some of his policy priorities, and he was among a slim few to initially back Florida Governor Ron DeSantis during his 2024 Republican presidential primary bid before the governor dropped out. Middleton has questioned Roy's conservative bona fides over his breaks with Trump on certain issues. Chip Roy is someone that spent a decade and a career fighting President Trump, opposing him again and again in every election, the GOP state senator told CBS Austin in an interview Thursday. Roy, meanwhile, has said that sometimes his job involves disagreeing with whoever's in office, even when they're from the same party. You need somebody who's demonstrated strength and independence, Roy told the Texas Tribune in an interview in February. We've got to defend the state of Texas, defend our borders, defend our streets, keep it safe, and defend ourselves against the federal government interfering with us, no matter who's there. Texas's 9th Congressional District GOP primary. Alex Mueller, a former oil and gas finance executive and combat veteran, is running against State Representative Briscoe Kane after a crowded GOP primary that included seven other candidates forced the pair into a runoff for the newly drawn 9th Congressional District. The Houston area House seat is one of five that Republicans reshaped in their mid-decade redistricting efforts to eliminate five Democratic seats. The 9th Congressional District previously belonged to Green. Several notable players have weighed in on the race: Trump House Majority Leader Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana, and House Majority Whip Tom Emmer, Republican of Minnesota, are backing Mueller, while Governor Greg Abbott, Republican, former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, Republican of Texas, and Representatives Lance Gooden, Republican of Texas, and Pete Sessions, Republican of Texas, among others, are backing Kane. Polling released by the University of Houston's Hobby School of Public Affairs this month found Mueller holding a 9-point lead over Kane, with 9% of respondents undecided. Trump would have won the new district by 20 points in 2024, according to Spectrum News. The story, John Bolton, U.S.-Iran peace talks are a mistake. Former White House National Security Advisor John Bolton on Monday said the negotiations to end the war in Iran are a mistake. Bolton, an outspoken critic of President Trump's handling of the conflict, told CNN's Pamela Brown that he hopes to see the discussions break down. "I think the ceasefire was a mistake," he said. "I think these negotiations are a mistake. I think we're on the verge of something that ultimately history will decide was a catastrophic loss for the United States. We have done significant damage to the Islamic Republic of Iran, and right now we're letting them undo the damage, and that is a real tragedy, not just for us, but for the people in the region too," he continued. Bolton lambasted the 60-day extension of the ceasefire, one of the expectations reportedly set out in the latest peace proposal, suggesting that Iran wants a longer timeline that will only extend as months drag along. "I don't think Donald Trump is analyzing what America's strategic interests are here," Bolton continued. "I think he's looking at the price of gas at the pump, and he's doing whatever he can to bring it down." The comments follow Bolton's calls last week to end the ceasefire. He urged the administration to force open the Strait of Hormuz, where roughly 20% of the world's oil passes through. The effective closure of the key waterway since the onset of the conflict in February has caused global energy prices to skyrocket. The national gas price average is about $4.50 as of Monday per AAA. Bolton said the Strait of Hormuz should be taken away from Iran, taking aim at the Trump administration's handling of the conflict. "Iran has to learn the lesson. It cannot get its way in the Gulf by military force," he added. "It's reasonable to ask, why didn't the administration think of this at the beginning of the war? I don't know the answer to that question, but the answer now is not to have a diplomatic deal that can be reversed, like by Iran, by turning a light switch on and off." The U.S. and Iran are currently in talks about a possible peace deal, which includes discussions about reopening the passageway. A sticking point in these negotiations relates to Iran's nuclear capabilities, including its enriched uranium stockpile. Trump and other administration officials have accused Iran of being an imminent nuclear threat early in the conflict, and has said Iran cannot possess a nuclear weapon. Iran has always defended its nuclear program as developed for peaceful purposes. Bolton on Monday attacked his former boss, saying Trump thinks everybody wants to make a deal on just about everything and is palpably desperate to have a deal. And Iran is playing him on that. They're stretching him out. They're buying time, Bolton told CNN. All of that works in their advantage. The story, Senate Democrat pepper sprayed at protest outside ICE detention facility in New Jersey. Senator Andy Kim, Democrat of New Jersey, on Monday was pepper sprayed by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, officers while demonstrators gathered outside an immigration detention facility in Newark, New Jersey. Videos circulated online of mutual aid volunteers pouring water into Kim's eyes while he held an ice pack on his head. On hand, one video showed Kim speaking directly to ICE agents surrounding a detained individual, with another showing him speaking with demonstrators. Kim later Monday said he saw chaos inside and outside of Delaney Hall, the detention center where around 300 migrants are holding a hunger and work strike against the center's conditions. Detainees protesting the lack of due process, the disgusting food and poor treatment, while their families and advocates stood outside calling for help, he wrote on the social platform X. "Instead of engaging with me and others about the poor conditions, I sent in an armored vehicle and a line of armed agents that only poured gasoline on the fire." Kim said he saw ICE agents tackle and restrain demonstrators while agents fired pepper balls and spray into the crowd. What I witnessed and experienced today was shameful, the New Jersey Democrat said. Delaney Hall is a failure. It's this administration's failure. The only way to make this right for our communities is to shut it down and make sure the failures we've seen never happen again. Kim joined Democratic elected officials, including New Jersey Governor Mikey Sherrill and Representatives Rob Menendez, LaMonica McIver, and Nellie Poo outside the detention center for an oversight visit of the facility. Sherrill and Menendez said they were denied access after they initially arrived. All of the elected Democrats were photographed speaking with protesters. Kim told the New Jersey Globe that it was difficult to breathe after ICE officers pepper sprayed him and demonstrators while with other officers using batons to disperse the crowds. What we saw here is unfortunately just what we see all over the country, Kim told NJ.com, an advanced local news affiliate based in New Jersey. It's a sad, sad day. A Department of Homeland Security spokesperson said Kim was allowed into the facility after he made a direct call to Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen. The spokesperson did not confirm whether Sherrill or other lawmakers were allowed access into the facility. Mullen posted on X that there was no hunger strike at the facility and called the Democrats' visit to Delaney Hall a political stunt. Protesters have gathered outside the facility since Friday, when organizer Gabriela Soto arrived at the detention center at the start of the hunger and work strike, the New York City-based outlet The City reported. The people inside Delaney Hall are fathers and mothers, sons and daughters, and members of our community, Soto, whose husband has been detained at Delaney Hall since February, told the outlet. In New Jersey, we believe in the rule of law and that everyone deserves to be treated with basic dignity. We have a duty to safeguard the rights, health, and well-being of everyone within our borders. The story: officials lift evacuation orders for some California residents living near a damaged chemical tank. Emergency officials lifted an evacuation order for some of the people who live near a damaged tank containing a hazardous chemical in Southern California after temperatures inside the tank fell enough to eliminate the risk of a catastrophic explosion. Well, there's no longer a risk of a major explosion at the GKN Aerospace Transparency Systems plant in Garden Grove. There's still a chance for a smaller blast or a fire, Orange County Fire Authority Division Chief Craig Covey said during a news conference on Monday. An overnight evaluation of a tank containing 6,000 to 7,000 gallons or 22,700 to 26,500 liters of methyl methacrylate, which is a highly flammable, showed a reduction of pressure inside the tank thanks to a crack that was discovered Sunday. About two-thirds, or roughly 34,000, of the evacuated residents can go home as a result, Covey said. It's not over yet. We still have work to do, Covey said. We still have to mitigate a fire and a very small explosion concern and also a spill potential. Officials began ordering residents of Garden Grove near Los Angeles to evacuate their homes on Thursday after the tank overheated, and by the weekend about 50,000 residents had been told to leave. Officials said they needed to cool the tank to prevent a toxic leak or explosion. The tank's interior had cooled to 93 degrees Fahrenheit or 33.9 degrees centigrade. Covey said Monday, down from 100 degrees or 37.7 degrees centigrade a day earlier.